thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to a magical Monday Night Magic episode 204. On our next anniversary, we're going to have a lot of candles on our Monday Night Magic birthday cake. To help me celebrate this overall even-numbered episode, I have three amazing co-hosts. We're going to go around the table here. I'm actually looking at my Jonas Brothers poster while I do this, so I'm pretending I'm looking at you guys.
Can I be the hot one?
Which one is that?
I don't know. You actually got to watch the Jonas Brothers.
Because two of them are handsome, one is nearly deformed.
Eric, the nearly deformed one would be Conley.
Okay, Eric, you're deformed.
Eric, you're married. You can afford to be the deformed one. I'm still single. I need to be the hot one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, theoretically, I could lose all my limbs, and she's stuck with me.
Can't get away.
Named Bob. So I have Conley here with me, back due to popular demand and just overall sassiness. I also have Eric to bring a little bit more. Just kind of
so try to calm
hair
things
to the podcast.
Down.
It's impossible.
And our third co-host, a new addition that people love, the silky smoothness from the last episode, we have Marcel.
Hello, hello. How you guys doing again?
Now, Marcel, just to help me out, do you have any facial hair?
Yes, I do. I got a goatee.
Okay, good. You feel quite well.
I don't shave, and it stays shaped. It's been like that for the past 10 years.
I'm with you. I've had mine since about high school, and I get hair. You know, I do get the 5 o'clock shadow at the other places, but it's much thicker in the, you know, the go zone as opposed to the no go zone.
I see.
Well, I have a neck beard.
I bet you do. You have a very big no go zone. Okay, guys, this is not a movie or not a podcast about facial hair. It's a podcast about Magic: The Gathering, and this is a game we actually play once in a while. So we're going to talk to you about it. We're going to go through news, listener emails. Finally, due to overwhelming negative feedback from our listeners, I'm finally going to announce the winners of our Planeswalker movie podcast contest. Podcast contest? Yeah, that's right.
But what they don't know is that you created a username and you're giving away the prize to a fake person.
People could be doing that. I have no idea. Except I would doubt somebody would really create a fake address like in the Ukraine. I've sent these packs, Trinidad and Tobago, I've sent packs, so I've sent them all over the place.
Doesn't that cost a lot of money?
Yes. The cost of sending stuff to Trinidad and Tobago is much more than the cost of the packs themselves.
Okay.
So, guys, let's go right into our magic news. And, Eric, you're here, so your job is to keep me on track, right?
Apparently not.
Cricket.
Apparently, Eric has fallen asleep because he's old.
He's probably, I don't know what he's doing. He didn't drop from the call?
No, I'm actually kind of worried about him. I didn't hear like a, and then, you know, you hear like
he's watching
silence.
The Jonas Brothers.
Here he is. He's what to watch. He had to go to the bathroom real quick just to, you know, take care of something. So, guys, the three of us are going to bust through some magic news this week because our co-hosts are dropping like flies. So the first,
I have AT. Oh, must have AT&T.
It is
no. I you did not get my message.
No.
I texted you.
You texted me.
I was having chatted you whatever through Skype there. Sorry, I had kid issues, so I had to.
Oh, that's okay.
Step away for a minute.
I thought you were sexting there for a bit. I'm like, wow, this is really dirty.
Yours escaped the handcuffs too.
Get back in your cage.
Yeah, next time I'm gonna message Conley. He can multitask.
You know, Eric's like, yeah. I mean, kids can go on kennels, right? Everyone's just like, no, they can't, Eric. But, I mean, cribs are basically kennels without a top. If you think about it.
Sometimes they even have a top. They have those new, like, splatter screens that you put on top of it.
Exactly. You've seen those.
Well, because, like, one of the mobile things fell on a kid once, and so some guy invented, like, the splatter screen. I don't know. It's retarded.
Eric, you are sorely lacking in your job of keeping us on track. We're talking about splatter screens before one word of magic news has been uttered. So we're going to go into this is the one that I'm excited about. This is the one thing I put on the show notes. The rest is all Eric. So I put up this very small piece of news, but I'm excited for it. And this is the announcement of a new standalone Magic product called Arch Enemy.
They announced this like 2 months ago, Tom. Get on it.
This is Tuesday, April 20th, dickhead. So we're going to go over this right now.
They announced it a long time ago. They announced it before the conference where they previewed the first Rise of Eldrazi cards.
Well, I mean, words keep coming out of your mouth. I'm not hearing them, though. So I'm going to go through the deck names here because that actually is new.
Yeah, the deck names are. I'll give you that.
So
the deck names aren't used, but Conley was actually correct. They announced it quite a while ago.
God. I can't do the show by myself. I wish I could. Wish I could.
I'm just here for color.
June 18th, these will be available for churches, just like Plane Chase. These will be pre-constructed magic decks, and those decks will be described like this. We have Bring About the Undead Apocalypse. It says we're reanimating zombie horrors. We're using big creatures to deal lethal damage, and then hunt down other planeswalkers with your aberrant army of the undead. We have Assemble the Doomsday Machine, which is by far the coolest name of any of these decks here. Use machinery incomprehensible to others to build a doomsday device. Your goal is to destroy the whole world and any planeswalker foolish enough to oppose you. Trample civilization underfoot. You are a planeswalker possessed by a maniacal desire to obliterate civilization by unleashing the forces of nature upon the world, or more Marlon Wayans movies. Last but not least, we have Scorch the World with Dragonfire. When you use your force of dragons to rain down incendiary destruction upon lesser planeswalkers, how can they hope to stop you? And that's what we got. So do you guys have any theories about how this is, what is going to be the game structure for this?
Basically, it's a like everybody against one person type thing. I mean, we don't obviously know the rules, but I assume they'll give the one person a bunch of advantages, like either a higher starting life total, more cards in hand, like special rules to allow them to be able to fight off multiple players at the same time. And I assume go ahead.
They're also having the game have oversized cards like the Plane Chase planes, although they will not be Plane Chase planes.
Yeah.
So,
and then I assume they'll also like these decks probably are they're for the one person, I assume, and not for the many people. They show up with whatever decks they want. I would guess, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, the one big this was on the MTG Salvation forums. That was a big discussion. Was how would the turns go? I mean, is this kind of like a multiplayer game where every player goes in a row, or is it gonna be something where, hey, I'm playing the arch enemy deck. I'm playing one of these things. I'm battling everybody else. Do I go every other turn to keep it?
Yeah, it's probably like that. It's probably like two-headed giant. Like you're one side of the table, and they're the other side. They take their turn all at once.
Okay, no, that makes sense.
Because otherwise, it would get a little confusing for you.
Now, I mean, for you guys, do you, obviously I'm excited, I'm a casual guy, do you guys care about this at all, not care, what do you think?
I mean, any Magic product's a good product, right? Gets more people into the game.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, they like things like Plane Chase and a lot of these standalone products. If you play a lot of things like Elder Dragon Highlander or other formats, this can be a nice way to get a lot of singletons or two-ofs of some key cards for your other decks.
Plane Chase was fun, but they kind of stopped supporting it already. They said that they haven't, but I wish they would have kept giving out the big Plane Chase cards at like pre-releases and stuff. It would just get some more product out there. I only played like for a couple weeks, and then it kind of like got a little old.
Yeah, I agree with you. It seems like they kind of let it die in the vine a little bit, where they easily could have kept it going by giving us a new plane every 3 months, something like that.
Yeah, just something to kind of spice it up a little bit, because like, I mean, if we only got Magic cards once a year, we probably wouldn't play Magic either. It'd probably get a little boring. So the fact that we get every 3 months, I mean, Rumor Season's like one of the most exciting times in Magic, so they kind of did not follow the same strategy for Plane Chase, which is strange. I mean, I'm sure they'll release some Plane Chase card in the future. They just have been lacking on it.
What about for you, Marcel? Do you have any thoughts about this?
I'm glad to see new things in Magic. Plane Chase, I never really got to play with it. I mean, I'm not really, I stick with this Magic. I only got so much time, so I can't try every different variant. So, I mean, I'm sure this is going to reach out to the more casual crowd, and it'll bring them more in. So I think it's healthier for the game overall.
All right, I'm excited. Hopefully, apparently we knew about this like 300 years ago, but I'm excited for this little bit of new news. And I'll be excited as we learn more about Arch Enemy coming up to June.
Yeah, this is actually announced on the day you were born.
No, it was April. It was April of 1979, Tom.
Yep.
All right, guys, we have a bunch of tournament stuff, so let me hand this over to, how about Eric? Yeah, you put all the stuff on there.
Sure.
It's all your fault.
It is, and hopefully I won't be interrupted yet again. So, TCG player, thanks. TCG player is going to have their 5K on May 1st in Boston. So they announced that a few weeks ago, but I wasn't on the show, and obviously I therefore didn't add it to the show notes. So just so you know, May 1st, Boston, TCG player 5K. Enjoy.
Just want to point out I just want to point out how fair we're being right now about this.
Oh, you're being overly fair.
Fair.
Overly fair.
F-A-I-R. Underlined, blinking, bold text.
We definitely were fair in mentioning those scumbags. Wait.
Amen.
Oops.
I'm just kidding.
So this is going to be a standard tournament, right?
Yes, it's going to be a standard tournament, and on Sunday they're going to have a PTQ. So, there you go. The Magic the Gathering schedule is up for Gen Con. Gen Con is going to be held August 4th through 8th.
Wow, I have to give the Gen Con award for this. It might be the ugliest webpage I've ever seen.
Yes.
It's like yellow with blue text. Oh. God, it just hurts my eyes. I'm scrolling through it real fast, and I'm almost giving myself a seizure right now.
I'm just announcing that it's there. I'm not even looking at it.
Good God, so, how many? They list every single one. There must be 300 listings on this? Well, there's M11 Limited. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, all the tournaments. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff.
God. I'm amazed. It keeps going. I'm amazing myself. There's vintage tournaments. There you go. Two-headed giant. There's a million. There's Plane Chase. We were talking about that. We got EDH.
Grand Melee.
Arch Enemy Limited. There you go. Keeping it this topical. And those are four. Those are a four-person like tournament. So that's kind of interesting.
3-on-1, baby.
Yeah. This is. I don't know. They apparently. Have you guys ever been to Gen Con?
Nope.
And
well, we're really interesting. So for the next piece of information,
I want to speculate all day. I want to imagine me playing a Klingon in one of these tournaments.
I've almost gone before because they have the Vintage and Legacy champs there, which are basically, you know, Vintage Worlds and Legacy Worlds. But I've never actually gone. I have a lot of friends that go that play like Vintage as their main format, though.
I mean, are these really competitive tournaments? Are there a lot of, you know, upper echelon Magic players going to these, or would this be potential places would be kind of ripe pickings for people that are decent Magic players?
I mean, it's pretty much anyone within like 500 miles goes to it, and then like for the geeks. For the World Championships and stuff, like you have like the best Vintage players going. We could argue about whether they were considered the best Magic players in the world, but yeah, so you have like super competitive Vintage and Legacy players going. But beyond that, it's kind of just like who's around or like who has a booth set up and stuff like that. I mean, it's just a convention. Like if you're super into Magic or super into any of the other things they have there, it's not like it's only Magic. Then you'll go and have a good time.
And would this tend to be mostly a North American kind of group of players, or is there even an international flavor to these?
I mean, there are definitely people that go from like Europe and stuff like that.
Not
as many, of course. But
I've always wanted to go to one of these just for some of the, you know, comic book and because they have some comic book stuff there, right, at Gen Con?
Yeah, they pretty much have anything nerdy you can think of, they have there.
So that if I wore my Starfleet uniform there, I would be cool. Like, they'd be like, hey, that's not weird.
Yeah, you might get yelled at by the Star Wars guys, but you'd be...
Oh, I'll have brass knuckles with me for the Star Wars guys. They're going
okay.
I'll crunch their little Boba Fett helmet, you know. All right, guys. What do we got next? We have Hasbro. Apparently Hasbro is doing well. Is that because Strawberry Shortcake is doing well, or is it because of something else?
Magic is definitely.
I'm going to guess Magic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Magic is listed in their first quarter earnings call as one of their top sellers. So, yeah,
sure
Magic.
Pretty sure it's one of their top sellers always, right? Like, do they ever even have to list that?
I don't know. I mean, I know that since Starkington Post has been around, I've started to see it being publicized, so.
Because, I mean, I know, like, when, like, the Transformers, like, movie and stuff comes out, obviously that's going to, like, give them more Transformer sales and stuff like that. But beyond that, like, it seems like Magic's going to be one of the best sellers always from them.
Well, I mean, certainly the past year it has been, ever since M10, right? I mean, things have been going crazy since then.
Well, it says their profits nearly tripled. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Does anybody else, they list the other top sellers. We obviously Magic the Gathering. It just says games because apparently Hasbro doesn't know what this is. We also had Nerf. We had Monopoly. We had Littlest Pet Shop and Play School. Does anybody else bother that Play School, where school is spelled incorrectly, is really popular?
Yeah, that's been. You don't remember Play School Toys when you were a kid?
I did, but I don't remember. I don't remember being shocked. I'm like, you think
it's with a K,
spelled,
right?
Yeah, with S K O O L. That's
hey Tom. All I can say is that's old school.
It is old. I think. What about Weeble Wobbles? Are they still around?
Yeah, I got some Weebles in my basement.
we're talking about Weebles, not Bull Weebles, like the infectious.
Oh, man. Just stop myself before I talk.
I dressed up as a Weeble one year for Halloween. It was good times.
I bet it was good times. People just kept hitting you with brooms and spraying stuff on you.
Yeah, it was fun. Like, it was, unfortunately, it was like a blown up. Basically, I was inside of a balloon, the equivalent.
That actually made it just more cool the way you just described it right now.
Well, I don't know. It was like, it was actually like full of air, so that way people hit me, it wouldn't hurt me. But then like my arm stuck out, and then we had to seal it off so the air wouldn't leak.
So you're kind of like the little kid from the Christmas story where if you fell down, he actually couldn't get back up?
I never fell down, but that would have been bad times.
Just take your candy bag and just kind of leave you there. Just kind of roll you around. All right. We start talking about inflatable bullweevil costumes. We should probably move on to our next news item.
Wasn't that bullweevil? Don't shortchange me.
It was a bullweevil.
No, weevils. Weevils wobble, but they don't fall down.
I had transitioned to bullweevils, and I thought you said you had an actual inflatable bullweevil costume.
No, I was a weeble.
Oh, well, that's not as cool. Then I would have pushed you down, too, or at least tried to. Doesn't that just invite people to try to push you down if you're like a weeble?
No, everyone just tried to hit me, but I mean, I was like 10 at the time, 11.
I mean, what did you go as next year? What, Starbright? Like, what did you go as the next year then?
No, next year I went as a fridge where my head was in the freezer and I had like chips on top and I was in a gigantic box and I had to like tie my candy bag to the handle of the fridge because I couldn't reach my hands around the fridge to hold the bag with both hands.
Did your parents not help you with your Halloween costumes?
No, they did. These were sweet. I won best costume 3 years in a row in middle school. And elementary school transitioning to middle school.
Okay. Nobody else wore their costumes that day, or what was...
No, I had sweet homemade costumes. The next year I went as a turkey in an oven. But then it rained and the oven fell apart, so then I had to tie the tinfoil around my neck, and I went as super turkey after that, and I just ran around, and everyone made fun of me because I just had like a...
I just imagine everybody like... I'm just trying to imagine where you put the little thermometer that pops out, you know, when the turkey is done. I'm just trying to imagine where you put that on your turkey.
Well, I was like,
okay, I'm moving on.
Sweet. Don't hate.
You are a scary dude. Okay, Eric, keep. What's our next thing?
This one I found really cool. Jamie Wakefield is returning to Magic. He posted an entry on his blog talking about it. And if you don't know who Jamie Wakefield is,
King of Fatties.
He is the King of Fatties. I mean, he's a dinosaur of Magic. I mean, he's all about the big green beasts. So pretty exciting. He's one of the quintessential old school players. His deck Secret Forces was kind of a big hit on the scene for a while. And probably one of the things he's best known for is his tournament reports, which are absolutely fabulous. So
I want to get to the point where I'm so famous that when I quit Magic and then start up later, it makes news.
Yeah, that is kind of weird when you think
about it. I've got to step away again. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I mean, so and I'd be curious to kind of see what he thinks of the new Eldrazi creatures, because they're not green, but they are definitely fatties of the extreme.
I mean, maybe that's why he's returning, Tom. Maybe it's not a coincidence.
And did you find it interesting that his goal is not just to get back in the Pro Tour, but it says to win a Pro Tour?
Well, I mean, if that's not your goal and you're playing competitively, there's something wrong with you.
And it's also apparently linked that he's coming out with a book in early June, which I also thought was interesting. It's called Secret Force, Quest for the Pro Tour 2.
That's strange.
Man with the mission.
So, I mean, for me, is Jamie Wakefield, is he in the Hall of Fame for Magic?
No.
No, okay. I don't know the Hall of Fame well to know who's in there and who's not.
Basically, in order to make the Hall of Fame, you basically have to have at least 3 Pro Tour top 8s. Some people with 2 have gotten elected due to other activities in the community. Like, for instance, Randy Buehler doesn't have, like, a whole ton of top 8s, but because he did, like, announcing and, you know, all kinds of other stuff for the community, he made the Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay, so it's kind of what you contribute to the game, but usually it's mostly defined by how well you've done on the Pro Tour.
That's why it's the Pro Tour Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in my mind, I'm kind of thinking about somebody like Evan Irwin, who does play a lot better Magic.
No, he's not even eligible. You have to have at least 100 Pro points in order to even...
Oh, okay. We've talked about this one. It almost seems like they should have, you know, like you say, Pro Tour Hall of Fame is for people with 100 or more Pro Tour points. They should almost have a, I don't know, Pro Tour for everybody else, or Hall of Fame for everybody else.
Well, they have, like, community spotlights and stuff like that, and that's kind of what the Invitational was before, is they kind of, like, invite, if you made the Invitational, you effectively made the Pro Tour for the community that year.
Okay.
But then they took away the Invitational, and despite them doing well now, but I think they should bring it back, but the guy... Without sounding too pompous, I probably would have made the Invitational last year for the deck builder slot, and so that kind of sucks that they didn't have it last year, but oh well.
What do you mean by the deck builder slot?
So they have 16 slots for the Invitational, and they're all signed different different sections. So, like, the world champion gets to go, the, you know, national champion gets to go, whatever. But then they have stuff like the resident deck genius gets to go, which is effectively the deck builder. Like, basically different categories that each slot goes to. So, like, the best writer gets to go, the best, you know, most popular pro gets to go, stuff like that. And so the 16 slots would go to different categories. And, like, for instance, Evan Irwin went in the last one that was held because of his writing. So he went as the writer. But, like, Resident Genius is a category. Like, it's kind of been used as a term in Magic now. Like, Mike Flores kind of likes to use it a lot because he was elected before as Resident Genius to go to the Invitational, and that's basically the player's favorite deck builder to go.
Okay. Let's see. Marcel, any thoughts about any of this before we move on to... I have to correct myself for a lot of things from last week, but before I go into the first correction.
Go on, keep going.
Okay. So we did want to... Marcel's like, I really want to hear this. This is going to be good. So the first of my multiple corrections will be... We talked about the upcoming paper versions, or I should say inspired by Duels of the Planeswalker decks. When we first heard about this, we weren't sure exactly what's going to be in the decks. We were trying to theorize, are these going to be exact one-for-one copies of the decks from the Xbox Live Arcade game, or simply inspired by them? Due to overwhelming feedback and just reality itself, these decks are going to be based just inspired by the Duels of the Planeswalker decks, not exact copies of them. So we may actually get a Planeswalker in them.
Yeah, you can almost guarantee there'll be the Planeswalker in there.
Which guarantees these things will sell like hotcakes.
Yeah, like we still have, surprisingly, at our card store, we still have a lot of... Garrick Crystal Liliana that never sold because we still had it in stock when Coalition versus Phyrexia came out, and people wanted that more because of the reserve list stuff. So, but Jace vs. Chandra sold incredibly well.
That's true. I guess you're right. I have Jace vs. Chandra. I have, you know, Divine versus Demonic. I did not get Liliana versus Garrick for whatever reason that is, and I can't explain that. For some ways, it seems like they release these in kind of little bursts where too many come out at one time, and I kind of lose interest. I wish they would space them out a little bit more.
Yeah, Noreen, does anybody have Liliana versus Garrick?
I do not.
Well, I know you don't. You just said you didn't. I was referring to the other two.
Know which one I don't have?
Liliana versus Garrick?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just...
Awesome. He just gave it away.
I don't have.
Either.
Before I drop off the call permanently here, I want to plug the fact that I've just sent Tom the show notes for Mr. Suitcase number 14, where you can hear about my first experience playing with Rise of the Eldrazi. Ooh. So... that's what I've been playing, and due to child problems, I will just drop off the call and save us the aggravation of me sometimes being here.
That's okay. Eric has to go make some babies.
I wish.
Wait.
Adios, gentlemen.
Have a good one.
All right, guys. We'll keep moving on. Unfortunately, by the end, I think Eric's going to be crying because we're going to be talking about, I don't know, you know, bootleg DVDs and, you know, importing, you know, prostitutes across state lines. Just all types of scary stuff by the end of this podcast.
Wait, since when is moving prostitution across state lines considered importing?
Well, isn't it, or exporting? Which would it be? Depends on, if I bring them to me, that's importing.
You didn't say national lines. I don't think you import from, like, a different state, do you?
You can.
Marcel, we have one versus one. I'm saying yes, I can import across state lines. Conley is saying no, you dumb Minnesota hick, you can't do that. Marcel, you get to be the deciding vote.
Well, it's untraditional, but you can't import it. You know, California State, we import a lot of other stuff from there, but we export most of our products. So, you know, we're number one exporter state in the country. So, yes, you're right, Tom.
There's a little plan. Yeah, so I am right. Now, this is actually topical. Did you guys read about Steven Seagal from about a week and a half ago?
No.
That he was arrested for having sex slaves?
Are you serious?
I am 100% serious. You can Google this while we talk. He is arrested for having sex slaves.
And wait. I've watched the Steven Seagal Sheriff show. That guy seems like a stand-up, cool dude.
He is a moron. Have you actually watched that show? He'll go, I mean, already he looks like he's on prednisone or steroids. He looks like he weighs 500 pounds now.
No, I agree. I'm not saying he's an intelligent. I'm just saying he seems like a cool, laid-back guy. Like, you would think because of his, like, martial arts stuff that he'd be all intense and serious all the time, and he kind of is, but at the same time, he's like, I don't know.
Well, he appears laid back. Now we know because he would go home and have his sex slaves. So
why
that released
does,
a lot of tension.
Why does Steven Seagal need a sex slave? Can't he, like, Steven Seagal?
Just pays him. Got money.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the story, he had these, quote, I'm doing big, huge air quotes, personal assistants that he would hire. They would fly around with him. He would force them to have sex with him. He even had people, if I understand, from different countries. And that's where he is in even extra deep doo-doo.
Yeah,
sex, Six on call, 24 hours a day, seven days a week.
That's the way Steven Seagal rolls.
Wow.
Dan, I don't know if you guys ever, did you ever watch Lawman at all with him in it?
No, I couldn't watch it. I couldn't believe him.
Yeah,
honestly.
Well, he would have two personalities. He'd be Steven Seagal, then all of a sudden, depending on who he was interacting with, he would try to adopt like their culture and their persona and their way of speaking. So all of a sudden, if he talked to someone who's Latino, he's talking in half Spanish, and he pretend now he's a black woman, and now he's back to like a redneck cracker guy. You're just like, who is this guy? He always wanted to pretend he was in charge.
So, all I'm thinking, Tom, is everybody has given up something in the past for some nookie. Maybe not to a prostitute, but you've had a friend or a girlfriend that you had to buy a bracelet for. Everybody's done it.
I'm going to let you keep talking. You say something really, really revealing.
No, I'm avoiding it, but you know you have. You know you've bought somebody a birthday present and expected to get some action because of it.
Dinner and a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's done it. They just haven't imported them from China.
That's a good point. I guess now I am married. I have things I have purchased that I am embarrassed of. I have purchased a full-size xylophone. I have purchased supposedly an ancient pot off of eBay. It was supposed to be like a Mesoamerican pot. We have a digital piano.
See, in reality, though, when you were ordering these things, they all just had the word sex on them.
Yes.
So you ordered a gigantic life-size pot of sex.
Yes, and then the most recent purchase that is currently we're trying to finance is a full-size king. It looks like King Tut's sarcophagus, but inside it's shelving.
What do you do with this?
I'm 100%. This is something you can buy. It's in different catalogs. It's like it's like 8 feet tall. It weighs on a couple hundred pounds. And it looks.
Why
like
does your wife want this thing?
She I don't know. She gets set. She want like she'll also need these things like the xylophone. We need to have. And this is just like a normal xylophone. This is like a xylophone made of wood with like gourds beneath it. It's really weird looking. And it doesn't even work. But
is this any signs of hoarding? You seen that show?
Yeah, this is a little bit, kind of like that. Instead of hoarding a lot of little things, she just splurges on these just ridiculously big items, like a full-size King Tut sarcophagus shelf.
Does it, like, open up? Is it like you can't see the shelf sometimes, and you open up the sarcophagus, and then there's...
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's saying, it looks like King Tut sarcophagus, and you creak it open, and inside there's a small number of shelves.
Out of curiosity, how much would a King Tut sarcophagus shelf go for?
I believe, and the thing is, it's the cost of the unit itself, and then the shipping is what really kills you. So the unit itself is about $800.
What the
fuck? But then to ship this thing, this is like a 200-pound, it's basically like Steven Seagal. I'm like shipping a human being to me. Like, you know, send me this person-shaped object that weighs more than a lot of people do. Ship it to me in a huge crate, and that was hundreds of dollars as well. Like, I was close to like buying it a plane seat. Like, you know, take it to the airport, put it into a seat, and then bring it to me.
All I'm saying, Tom, is it better be worth it. That's all I'm saying. Moving on.
Marital bliss is always worth it. If Eric was still here, he would probably concur with this. Next, let's actually talk about some magic stuff, guys. We have the 2010 Community Cup has been announced.
I'm upset about this.
Okay, I had some thoughts. Kind of, I'll let you start. What makes you kind of disappointed?
Well, no, like, the people they picked is fine, whatever. I have no problem with that. But I want to be picked.
Yeah, it's not as if well, I guess I know some of these. I know some of these. I mean, Joshua Clater from PRMGO, I have recognized that name. The rest of people I didn't really know.
Well, you know, you probably know Brad Nelson, FF Freak.
Yes, I do.
But,
and
like...
Then, and the press members, I'm just like, hey, where's the bit of love for MTG?
Yeah, all I'm saying is I write for two different websites, and then I do a podcast on a third website. And maybe this is what's getting me in trouble is this podcast, since I have some antics on it. But I would love to be in the Community Cup for next year. I'm sending a call out to Wizards right now. Consider me next year. Thank you.
Well, we talked about this. Obviously, you know, for doing this podcast, you can kind of let your hair down, if you will. I imagine you having like a mullet.
Well, I also know that they listen to this, though, and I'm hoping that, like, me joking around and stuff, it does not work against me for things like this.
The only thing I can say I've said, and this has come up on some of the apologies, the only thing I can honestly say that I've said that's really made people angry was me last week saying that the Deathless Angel art looked like she was obese. I got so many angry emails about that. I felt it was a fairly innocuous statement. No, 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 says the MTG cast listening crew.
People are freaky about that. So I just did my set review for TCG Player, And as a default, I refer to all Magic cards that aren't legendary as in the masculine form. I just, like, say this guy, like, he, whatever, you know, okay. I don't even think about it. But if it's got a legendary name and it's clearly a female, like a Chroma, for instance, I would say she because it's a legendary creature. Like, Drana from the new set is another female. So, like, if it has a clearly feminine name and is a legendary creature where it has a proper name, then I'll call it by a female. Otherwise, it's male. And, like, people are freaking out. Like, I was talking about Jiraga Tree Speaker. I'm like, this guy, blah, 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 turn two, makes mana. And, like, somebody in the comments is like, you're pissing me off. Jiraga Tree Speaker has Tiggo Bitties and you're calling him a guy. What the hell? Like, blah, blah, blah. And, like, emails about it. Like, why are you referring to, you know, this girl card? Clearly a girl card as a guy. I'm like, I don't care. Like, the fantasy thing's kind of cool or whatever, but, like, that's not why I play the game and I don't pay that much attention to it. So, like, if that's what, you know, gets your rocks off, then, you know, do that by yourself. But don't, like, push it off on other people that I have to be so politically correct and call cards, which are actually just inanimate objects, you know, females or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just literally just call every card male, just like I call cars, like vehicles, females, names or whatever. Like, just have it. I don't know.
What about for you, Marcel? Do you ever have any kind of weird conversations like people at F&Ms or like your kind of Magic play group at all about some people do have some weird things about their Magic cards where they anthropomorphize them into actual people, and they can get angry if you slight them.
Yeah, you talk about bad about a certain card that they like playing or a deck, and you just, you know, like one person I know was a fairy fanatic, and like I hated fairies, and I would do bad mouth whenever, and you could just see him getting, you know, a little bit furious and a little mad about it, and snap back a couple times, and it's like, it's not that serious. It's just a deck.
These are little pieces of cardboard that come in foil packaging like sun chips.
Yeah, like, you're playing, like, poker or whatever. You don't refer to the king card as a guy and the queen card as a girl. Come on.
That's a good point.
Nobody takes this stuff that seriously, but some people, they get all crazy about it.
And, Marcel, at some point here, maybe when we get a little further into the show, since you're kind of a newer one of our co-hosts, you'll have to share us kind of how you got into Magic and also kind of what your favorite cards are and kind of what your viewpoint is on Magic. Should we just do that right now? Since that is
sure, if you want.
Yeah, oh, wait, let me guess. Richard Garfield hired you as a sex slave originally.
Hey, how'd you know? How did you know?
Here's your song. Here's your top hat.
I mean, I played Magic a long time. I first got in like around Revised, and I played until about like Ice Age, a little bit after that, or Homelands, and I dropped off. And I didn't get back in until it was a Guild Pack. I mean, I missed like 7 years of Magic. I didn't play. But yeah, ever since Guild Pack, I got into that and been playing pretty much ever since. I actually stopped playing paper Magic because it's just too expensive for me. I play online pretty much exclusively, unless I do like drafting or sealed decks. I usually go to the card shop and do that. It's just, to me, it's a better experience than drafting online. My thoughts about Magic, what would I say? I mean, I like it because to me, it's like playing chess and you get to configure your pieces, and that's how I usually tell people. I like Magic because it's the aspect of just, you know, you're outwitting your opponent, and you got this creativity of building your decks, and I like that aspect. I like being able to show off my intelligence through this deck that's kind of witty or whatever, a different way of going about it. So I'm not necessarily a Spike player. I'm more of like a Johnny Spike. I like going more. I'm leaning more towards being more competitive, but I like the fun aspect of it, you know. And to me, that's what makes Magic.
Now, do you tend to be, like you said, you're playing MTGO mostly. Are you a standard guy? Are you a limited guy? Do you play them all?
I would like to play more limited, but it's expensive. But I usually play standard. I don't play extended as much because my card pool isn't as deep. I only got in that Guild Pack. I pretty much stay standard or black because I right now I got enough cards where I'm able to sell off my old set when the block's rotating, and then I can get all the cards. So I'm basically paid in, so I don't have to really buy new cards at this point. So I can stay in standard. It's not expensive for me, so I usually play that.
And this is something where I'm not sure what people can talk about, what they can't talk about with this, but say somebody is a big MTGO player and they've heard about these betas for when the new sets are coming out. How does someone potentially become or get into that beta program? Or like, what's the process? Like, I have no idea.
I believe they have a forum that when I first signed up for the beta, they had a link that was on the actual MTGO. And I believe there's a forum that you could sign up to become a beta tester, I believe. I was lucky enough to get on a couple of them. I don't know if I could talk about it, but I mean, it's an interesting experience, and you get to, you know, learn about the cars a little bit and interact.
I have a couple of friends that are beta testers. I mean, they're basically just playing Magic for free, and it's like basically you get like the new set, I think, and then you get every other car that's on MTGO can randomly appear in packs, and it's like half and half. So like you'll be playing like, you know, your Hand of Emrakul right next to a Crush of Worms and things like that. It's kind of crazy.
That's kind of cool, actually. It's like it's like a chaos draft.
Almost, yeah.
It's really good. It's good. The reason they did that, because early when I first got into the beta, they had it so that you played with the actual packs and you could draft with that. But I believe people that were playing beta got too good at actual limited because they're playing limited for free. So I think they probably cut that off and play the beta packs, because you can't play a strategy. When you play Eldrazi, you can't play the Eldrazi because you got all these other cars that are incorporated, and you really can't play the slow game like how they would do it in the limited. So
plus the other reason they did it is because they wanted to see every interaction possible on MTGO. So like, for instance, if like rebound plus flashback or something like that, like they actually get to see how that works in this occasionally. Whereas if you just drafted it in its own limited set, you only get to see how that set interacts with its own self.
So the first time I played rebound flashback, the all on the screen just goes black. Ooh,
not supposed to do that.
Oh, I think I did something bad, guys. Let's see. Well, all this. Let me read who is in the Community Cup, so you know who you are. I'm assuming they've contacted you by this point, but in case you haven't known, this is who you are. Community members are Brad Nelson, Channel Fireball contributor. We have Marin Baraba from the MTGO Academy founder, Joshua Claytor from Pure MGO, Caleb Milne, Wizards of the Coast VCL. I don't know. That sounds like a disease. We have Victor Bloodgood. That's a great name. Magic Online community member. Joseph Hill, Magic Online community member. And the press members are Evan Irwin, Magic Show host, and he's now the Star City Games community manager, which I think this happened a little while ago. I don't know what that means, though.
Yeah, he moved. Basically, he runs anything to do with like online stuff like Twitter, Facebook, stuff like that. He runs that. He also helps with tournaments, organization, and stuff. He actually just moved out to Roanoke to be at the Star City Games facility. He moved there from his location in Tennessee or wherever it was.
Really? Wow. I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then the last is Bill Stark, who is the founder and editor of the StarkingtonPost.com, who we talk about very, very much.
You talk about him very much. You got a man crush.
I do have a little bit of a man crush. Him and Jude Law, put them together.
Wow.
Wouldn't be able to resist.
It's too much.
Is that your man wish?
Jude Law is my man wish. We all have one, and Jude Law is it. Okay, guys. Man wishes. Conley.
I'll be kind of generic right now, because the playoffs are going on and we just got tied up and a little bummed out. But I'll say Kobe Bryant. It's my man crush.
Okay.
I got multiples, but that's my current man crush.
I bet you do. You've got a big appetite, Conley.
Like Shia LaBeouf. I want to be Shia LaBeouf. How's that guy not insane?
You want to be him, or you want to like be with him?
No, that's what a man crush is. You want to be that. Like, if you could have somebody's life, that's basically what a man crush is.
Oh, okay. I took man crush differently then.
You don't actually have a crush on this person, do you, Tom?
Why would you call it a man crush?
That's why it's a man crush and not just a crush. If it's just a crush, then you're just gay with a crush. That's what it is.
Okay, but mine was just a crush then.
You.
Oh, okay.
So, Marcel, with the newly defined man crush, or the person you would like to be, you can answer this question without feeling really weird like I do right now.
Well, maybe. Sean Connery? He always, even at this age, he always gets the women. You know, he's just debonair. So ever since James Bond, you know, I always liked him. So probably Sean Connery as of right now.
I guess maybe if I had to actually be somebody, if I really wanted to actually live most of life, I would have picked Patrick Stewart. So I would have loved to have actually been on the show Star Trek The Next Generation.
That could be the worst man crush of all time.
Okay, guys, I have asked, this is a, I probably mentioned this in a long time ago show, but this is an ongoing poll. I ask pretty much every new friend that I have. Is do you consider Patrick Stewart a male sex symbol?
No.
No.
Damn it. Okay.
What the hell?
The correct answer is yes.
No.
Most people say no, but I've had probably 20% say yes.
I haven't heard any woman ever going like, man, I would do Professor X right now. Like, nobody.
About Patrick, when he was Captain Jean-Luc Picard, he was kind of manly, but that. In a stiff British way.
No, his first commander, or whatever that guy's name is, the French guy, that guy is hotter than he was.
French Commander Riker, he was from Alaska.
Alaskan and France are the same thing, to be honest.
All right, we're going to go into the Rise of Eldrazi dev chat before everybody just says, Tom is too creepy to be on the show anymore. And this would just happen not too long. Do we have much information about this, actually?
About what?
There is a transcript of the Rise of Eldrazi dev chat. This was officially announced through the Mothership Wizard of the Coast site. And if you want to listen to what happened to this discussion, or read it, I should say, there's an actual transcript of that. I have personally never found it very interesting to read transcripts of chats, but it's just a personal bias.
Yeah, unless it's like Jessica Alba and Jessica Biel talking about how they're getting together that night for hot tubbing.
Yeah, like, you know, what kind of bras would be better, or do you like, you know, those sorts of things. I'm trying to bring it back to women here if you're trying to see this. I want to start talking about
you're doomed for the rest of your life.
Sandstone.
What a bottle of wine. Let's see.
Man crush.
You just said it. Like, that's scary.
Well, at least I owned up to it. Made him. I was like, oh, yeah, obviously.
And Rosie O'Donnell kind of looks like a man, so that's like three men that you have crushes on. That's crazy.
That's kind of a good point. And also, when you were talking about that same thing, I mentioned Janet Reno as well.
Ooh.
Yeah, your wife's divorcing you.
luckily, she's asleep right now. That's why I can say all these things.
You better keep buying her sarcophagus stuff, or you're gone.
Nothing says "I love you, honey" like a dead coffin.
I take it she doesn't listen to the show, huh?
No. She knows what magic is. Like, the cards are all over my room, but that's about as far as it goes. She doesn't hate it, but she's not interested in it either.
Oh, really? So she's not bothered by your magic obsession or anything?
No, not really. I mean, I've got, you know, 50 of these card boxes in my room. It's just, you know, it's kind of part of the, we've been married for a while, but it's kind of part of the price. Everybody has that weird thing about them, you know.
Yeah, like
sarcophaguses.
Yeah, exactly. I will live with, you know, having weird xylophones in my house, and she lives with having the magic cards here.
Yeah, like the closest female to me, for instance, like really likes it. Like, I've taken her to like Europe and stuff because of it, so that's always helpful. But she, like, you know, wants to learn how to play and thinks it's awesome that I make all this money and travel the world and stuff. So, like, I mean, as long as you, like, spin it in the right way, basically, you know, people should like it.
See, I have no way to spin it. What she sees is she sees lots of paper in my room, and then about once a week for about 2-3 hours, she sees me talking to myself in my room.
Yeah, but if you compare it to, like, other hobbies, if you're like, hey, honey, if I wasn't doing this, I would be, you know, golfing or whatever, which would be more expensive probably, and I would be gone for longer periods of time and blah, blah, blah. If you just look at it as a hobby, then it's not such a bad thing.
That's a good point, yeah, because I don't have, like, the money or... And, like, telling her, like, hey, I run MTG Cash. She's like, yeah, so what? She's like, does that cost us money?
I'm yeah,
like,
that's...
For a while it did, actually. She's like, really? What?
I was trying to explain to people that, like, I had, like, fans, like, writing into me and stuff, and, like, she would laugh at me. She's like, oh, fans. And then she went to Rome with me, and I had, like, people coming up and asking for signatures nonstop. She's like, I guess you're kind of like a rock star. It's like, yeah. I guess. Like,
they have man crushes on me.
Yeah, well, hopefully not, but maybe. Not Tom's definition, at least.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's why people always looked at me weird when I answered that question. But
otherwise, it's literally just a crush. There's no difference between a crush. It's just the fact that you're a guy, therefore you're, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've heard man crush in the way Tom was talking about it. That's how I thought it was actually was. But yeah. I never actually thought of a man crush. I'm like, it just never occurred to me, but I guess.
Right now, I plutonically love Marcel for backing me up on that one.
Well, yeah, you're both.
Okay, last couple things we got here, guys, is they officially announced the winners of the My Magic contest. This is where people could write in stories about how Magic changed their life or something that Magic did for them and win a trip to Pro Tour San Juan. And the main winner was actually Dan Alpers. He's the guy that runs Central Corridor Gamers, who we've been working on for doing donations to the Games for Troops. I don't even want to say a fundraiser, I guess. I'm not sure. He's raising both money and also supplies to send to troops who are gamers. So I wanted to say congrats to him for winning and getting a trip to Pro Tour San Juan, and he's going to wear an MTG Cast t-shirt, which I thought was fantastic. Not sure who's clapping, but I appreciate it. Oh, last one, I'm not sure why Eric put this on the show notes, but we have, this is over on Mana Nation, we have Jonathan Medina. He is, and I've heard, this is something that I've seen people do for as long as I played Magic, and it's a contest to themselves where they start with either a pack of cards or a single, then they trade up to one very expensive card. And this is a story about Jonathan Medina's rules for this and how he's going to trade up from a pack of Magic to a piece of the Power Nine. And he has all of his rules, you know, starts with one pack. It's from Rise of Eldrazi. I must trade only the contents of the pack which is open or cards acquired through the trades from that content of the pack. He has to document it. He can spend no money. He does not accept free cards. And he says he is not going to be trading unfairly with new players. Now, do you guys in your play groups or when you were first started playing Magic, did you have other people doing this? They had like their little deck box. It was like their trade box, what they've made from trading up from one single card or a pack of cards.
No.
I never heard of this.
I had a guy who trade up from some junky revised rare up to Ollie from Cairo, when Ollie from Cairo was really cool.
I mean, I get the concept. It still seems like a lot of work for not much gain.
Yes. Basically, you're trading time for money. I mean, that's really what you're doing.
But now, there's no way he's going to get this piece of power within, the next 3 months. It's not like he's trading, a 2 weeks for a piece of power. Then it would actually be somewhat efficient. But, there's no way he's going to trade unless he opens up a Gideon, and then he might be a little bit quicker to get there. But, it just seems like a lot of time.
I'm with you, Jonathan. I've known people to do this, so good luck. But you're right, it's going to take forever. And that's what it is you have to take these very careful incremental gains and slowly build it up. And
I don't get how this is article worthy. This would seem boring. After the fourth week, you're like, okay, he traded a Shockland for a Shockland plus a crap rare. And then he traded that crap rare for four good uncommons. He traded those four good uncommons for four Bloodbred Elves. Then he traded the four Bloodbred Elves for another Shockland. And he traded, it doesn't seem exciting.
You are reading my mind right now.
Yeah, it seems pretty boring.
But basically, I want to read this, then I want to read the article at the end where he lists, what he all traded for and got, and what he ended up with. That's all that I care about.
It'd be 5,000 words.
Before and end, he said in between, that's going to be a little dry.
Yeah.
10 years later.
Exactly. It could be, who knows what Magic cards will have out by then. So, guys, that is the end of the Magic news. Do you have anything to add before we hear about you two guys' Rise of the Eldrazi experiences?
Did you say guys's?
Guys's.
You guys's.
Guys's.
So, I got nothing.
Nothing.
Not nada.
I know you got nothing. So, Marcel, let's start with you, because I know you got to play in the Rise of the Eldrazi, one of the release events. So, just kind of share with what you ended up playing and what you found was good and not so good.
Found out the Eldrazi hardly ever come out. That's yes. One thing I know. They're way overrated. One of the murmurs throughout the room was how probably one or two people actually casted Eldrazi during the entire tournament. There was 24 people playing. So, it was every time I had them in my hand, they were just sitting there looking at me, laughing, saying you got a dead card. So, I wasn't too particularly fond of them. Even though I was playing blue-white, and that's probably a big reason why I wasn't able to cast them.
That's the worst color combination to get Eldrazi. Yeah. If you're playing Eldrazi, you almost have to dedicate your deck to kind of ramp them out.
Yeah, pretty much. I've known people that had a ramp deck with the spawn tokens, and they just never pulled their Eldrazi. They had all these tokens out and sitting there. One guy had about 7 or 8 tokens out there, just laughing at me. And then he had the green guy, the brood. That gives them all 2+2+1.
Yeah, brood one.
He finally won with that. But just nothing fun. The blue white levels. The only reason I played with the Eldrazi because I wanted something big. I had I leveled out at 5 with the Invoker, the blue flying one. I love that card. That card's great.
Yeah, 3/3 flyer for 5 is already okay, and then I can give everything else flying. Is just crazy.
Yeah, nutty. I love it. I love it. With Training Grounds, I didn't have that card, but I would love to. But my brother was playing. He was playing with the white Invoker in Training Grounds. So he had basically a soft lock with that Invoker at, basically 6 mana. And, he won quite a few games with that. What I played with, I had levelers. I had 9 levelers, 5 of the blue, and then 4 of the white ones. And then I had Time for Heroes.
Yeah, all the ones that have a level counter, they get +2/+2.
Yeah, that card's nuts. And I can't believe it's uncommon, actually. I would expect that to be rare. Just I see that really just in drafts as being crazy.
Now, did you have a personal favorite level up creature in your deck, or that you had played against you?
I like the sky. What was it? The Skywalkers. Let me see. The ones that are unblockable, basically, that you can pump up the Sky Patrol.
Okay.
Oh, it gets out and becomes unblockable.
They just race. Yeah. I thought my deck was going to be a little faster, but they're actually a little slower. It's more of a control thing because you want to build up your creatures, but once they get going, they get going. Just all the level ups were good. The draw card guy, he always drew cards. He's good. His level up cost being 2 is, you probably pump mine into him, but there's not enough removal going around for it to be a waste. And
it, Enclave Cryptologist.
Enclave Cryptologist. Sorry, I'm really bad with the names. I just know the functions of the cards.
It's fine. That was our preview card, so I had to make sure we.
It was actually a preview card.
Yeah, I like him. He was great. And then I had Deathless Angel that saved a few games. I was able to hold it down. And Drake Umbra, the enchantment, that gives you the +3/+3 and then the Totem Armor. Yeah, that came through consistently. A card that I hate is Domestication. That card consistently came through and boned me time in and time again.
That's a good segue to mine, because I had two Domestications in my team draft that I did.
And then how were you guys using this? Were you using this to steal their big Eldrazi just to get out of the way? Or using it to
act
on a creature? How were you using Domestication?
You take utility guys early, like you take their tappers or their... For instance, I faced down a Gruul Jaws Vampire, and I literally had nothing in my deck other than a Splash Gelatin. I was also playing Blue-White Levelers. This is in a team draft. I had to work during the release part, but we do a thing at Enchanted Grounds called 24 Hours of Magic. And basically show up, you do the FNM draft at 7 o'clock. We had 72 players playing that, so the store was kind of full. And then we had about 50 players stay all night long, and we give away raffle tickets based on what time it is and to the player. And then at 7 o'clock, we give away a full set of Rise of Eldrazi to whoever wins the raffle. For every tournament you enter, basically you get more raffle tickets. And then, but I ended up doing like a team draft and drafted like a blue-white leveler deck, and I splashed Gelatinous Genesis off of two Evolving Wilds, the Terramorphic Expanse card.
Yeah.
But, Domestication, you just want to like take their, like, for instance, I took a Vindicator, Kabira Vindicator, which is the guy that gives your whole team +1/+1, and then eventually +2/+2. So, like, took that, and I mean, I only can get into level 2 to where he gives my other team +1/+1, but it's still way better than having that on your opponent's side before he gets to level it up all the way. Or a couple other times, like, I took my opponent had the White Invoker, whatever that one is. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, like Dawn Glare or something like that. And then you put a Hyena Umbra on it, and then I Domestication that. So you're really just looking to take like early kind of utility guys that, you know, have an impact on the game later on, or like their level up guys before they get leveled up. Like, I could see using it to take an Eldrazi, but I mean, that's going to come up like once out of every 20 times or whatever if you're just trying to punish through. But one of the cool cards I had that I didn't know if it'd be good or not, I had a Gravitational Shift, which gives all flyers you control +2/+0 and non-flyers -2/-0. And I had about 9 level up guys that got flying, plus I had the Frostwind Invoker, which is the blue one, and 3 McKinney Griffins. So I had
that card is for a common 2/4 fly. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so I had like 13 flyers or something like that, and then pretty much all my non-flyers were utility guys. Like I had a Cryptologist, I had a Lighthouse Chronologist, the mythic that takes extra turns, which I actually got active one game on turn 4, which was pretty savage, because I had 4 islands. I just went straight 4 straight islands and got him going on turn 4. But I had like him, I had the tapper, the 0/1 that taps guys, like things like that I'm not going to be attacking with on the ground anyway. I did have 2 of the Halimar Wave Watch guys, which become the 6/6 island walk eventually, but like even as a 4/6, that guy's still fine. So pretty much my whole team was getting bonuses, and meanwhile my opponent's team was, you know, being shut off. And that with Domestication is also really good, because you can take guys with up to like 5 power, because they get -2/-0, so you can steal them then. But yeah, it was pretty insane. I actually started the draft off going green, and then I got a 13th pick Domestication, and I was like, I believe I'll switch into blue now.
That's a signal, I think, is what it's called.
Yeah, so I splashed my Gelatinous Genesis, which was okay. It wasn't that, it was like, it's a little man intensive, especially for a blue-white deck, but I mean, it was a good finisher. I ended up going 3-1. We did a team draft 1-4. And the only reason I lost in game 3 to this guy who got a Gruul Jaws Vampire active. I Domesticationed it. He then killed it, so I 2-for-1 him, so I was pretty happy about that. But then he played
the imp that gets stuff back?
Yeah, the imp. I don't know what his name is, but yeah, the imp that gets him back. Played it and leveled it up immediately to where I couldn't steal it and became a 4-4. And then I literally had nothing in my deck that could not die to that thing. So like all I was trying to do was race. I ended up getting him down to 3 life actually. And played like a Gelatinous Genesis and made him like 8-for-1 himself on the Gelatinous Genesis, but eventually that guy just took me over. I had nothing that could actually kill it or anything like that. I could tap it down or give it a guard duty or something like that, but nothing that was going to remove it from the table except for my Domestication that I already used. So that guy just destroyed me. But yeah, the Eldrazi, it seems like you really do have to build around them. It's not like they're good for every deck. The only one that I would even consider for any deck is Ulamog's Crusher, the 8-mana one, just because at the top of the curve, that guy's really, really strong. But blue-white pretty much really doesn't want any Eldrazi at all. The most common Eldrazi deck is red-green, just because they have so much. You can, like, turn 2 Nest Invader, turn 3 Brood Birthing, and then, like, turn 4, you know, you have a Ulamog's Crusher in play or whatever, which is pretty insane. And that actually, I saw that happen a couple times. Black also, because it has a little bit of the spawn creations that can kind of get the Eldrazi's out, but pretty much like you have to almost be green to really want to get those guys out. And they are possible to cast. It's not like you don't ever want to run them, but you just need to make sure that you're like you're not throwing them in every single deck you have just because they're cool and big or whatever. So like they are a theme, but they only go in certain decks.
Are there any other sort of draft archetypes to be watching out for? We mentioned, you know, blue-white leveler, you know, red-green, kind of ramping up to Eldrazi. Are there any other things people should be watching out for?
I liked blue-green was pretty good as well. You basically get, like, flyers and levelers with mana acceleration, so your levelers get active much quicker. So that was pretty cool. And then black-red's always popular because it's got infinite removal, and it's still good in this format as well. I didn't see any monocolor decks, so I don't know if that was different for you guys. I never saw anybody drop a monocolor deck. I'm sure it's possible, but...
No, of all the ones I've played, they're all at least two colors, if not two with a splash.
Yeah, no monos.
Yeah, like, it seems like monocolor is a possibility, but I just didn't see it. There's some decent fixing between, like, Prophetic Prism and Evolving Wilds, stuff like that. So, I mean, you're kind of encouraged to go multiple colors, but... You know, monocolor deck might be, you know, as the format kind of gets extrapolated a little bit, might turn out to be pretty good.
Are you guys in general excited about this format? Are you meh? Like, where are you at as we go into Rise of Eldrazi Limited and into the future?
It's okay. I'm not as excited as I thought I would be after playing it. I mean, it's still fun and all, but I think that levelers, they do it. As long as they go levelers into future sets, then there's going to be no problem. Levelers just make limited. It's beautiful. I love it. But as far as the all in all, it's going to wear thin, really, I think, in about like a month or two.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll eventually wear on us, but luckily we only have this format for 3 months, 4 months at most. So that's good. The one thing I like about it is that it's such a different change of pace from Zendikar, and like, I mean, it's not as slow as people originally thought it was going to be. It's not like you're like always just waiting until turn 8, you know, playing lands until turn 8 and then casting a giant guy. But at the same time, the tools are there to be able to do that. You can draft like a wall style deck. Like, I saw a couple of Vent Sentinel decks, which are pretty cool. One guy had 4 Vent Sentinels and like three Ogre Sentries, and then like 2 Battle Ramparts, and was like giving his Vent Sentinels haste and then shooting opponents for like 8 and stuff like that. It was pretty crazy. But like, and then at the top of his curve, even though he was red-black, he was still able to cast Eldrazi just because he had so much time with these walls. So he had like Vent Sentinels as his win conditions and then like Pathraiser of Ulamog. So it was kind of cool. But like just the fact that the format is slower, like we're talking 2 to 3 turns slower at the least, than Zendikar. I think it's a nice change of pace. I'm glad that this is not going to be the case for an entire block, because I think it would probably wear thin, like Marcel was saying. But for like 3 to 4 months, I think we can handle it.
Yeah, I think it'll be exciting. I'll be ready for, what is it, the next set coming out?
Well, it's M11 is next, and then Scars of Mirrodin after that.
Oh, well, how many cards are rotating with M11? Is it half of it, or how do they say?
Actually, nothing rotates with M11. It's going to be kind of strange. So M11 and M10 will both be legal for 3 months together, and then when Scars of Mirrodin comes out, then M10 and Shards rotates. And then from then on, we'll be on the schedule to where when the new block comes out, the last block plus the core set will rotate at the same time.
Wow. It will truly be dogs and cats living together for 3 months. All right. Well, guys, do we have anything else before I go on to some listener emails?
Go ahead.
Tell me how I'm a fat person-hating sexist bastard was basically the theme of the emails this week.
It's a slight homosexual tendency.
Yeah. Well, that came out this week. So for next week, who knows? It's going to be a... Yeah, whatever. It's going to be like 4th of July at John's house. So there you go. So listener emails, we love to get them. You can email me at pitimp, P-I-T, oh, I had to swallow there, P-I-T-I-M-P at mtgcast.com. Conley, where should they email you at for their deck requests?
No deck. Please, no deck requests. I get so many. I like literally feel bad that I don't answer them because like, it just, it's so much effort on my part and it takes so much time and I get so many of them I physically can't answer them all, but I still feel bad because I read them and these people like seem genuine, but I do have something to talk to you about after the show. I'll bring it up now, but I don't want to burn any bridges, by the way, Tom. So
with me or someone else?
With someone else.
Oh, Tom, this is going to be a real uncomfortable rest of the podcast.
Someone that you know of.
Oh, it, okay.
It was a... I'll explain later. Anyway, email is conley@mtgcast.com.
And Marcel, where should they email you at?
Marcel@mtgcast.com.
Sensing a theme here with email addresses. All right. Well, this started off here as Drake emails in to tells Tom to check out the movie Troll 2. And he also sent me an entire link where Jack had me very confused last episode. He was talking about the tips and trick cards, how people would take them and they would rip them up to use them to make joints. And I honestly couldn't understand what he was talking about. Like, I'm trying to imagine, like, people, like, ripping them in half, you know, like, trying to peel the two layers apart to, like, use it.
Seems like Marcel might know a little bit more about this.
Marcel doesn't need to tell me because this guy sent me Wikipedia links to explain this to me.
Oh, seriously? Wow.
So I understand that... Well, here, we'll just say what it is you could use this for a tobacco cigarette if you want. Take the tip trick card and you would basically rip it, what would you say, it horizontally, so it would be the short way?
To where there's...
In a half-inch strip, and you'd roll that up, and that's what kind of makes the one end of it, it helps you roll it, I guess?
Oh, wow, that'd be too big.
This was on the Wikipedia page. That was the only way I could understand. Jack had me completely confused last week about this.
I think you could split it on the card face, like the back and the front. It would be like two flaps.
Okay.
You make the thickness of the card thinner, and then you might actually roll that with some tobacco and make a joint out of there.
Okay, really? So here we go. Other ways, I used to think if we had this very cool, I think he was like 12 or 13, was more to do with magic cards. This makes me think of a next episode for that show now that he's a little bit older. James D. from Reno, he said he went and looked at the Deathless Angel's art and doesn't think she's fat. Says she just thinks she has big hips, and that's not a bad thing.
I like me some big hips.
He also had some fun at his pre-release with Splinter Twin. He put on a Kozilek Predator and started getting extra spawn tokens into each turn. He also had a Jada Lifestrider to gain a lot of life. And his question, and this is, I actually emailed him because I think I know the answer to this one, is if he puts a Splinter Twin onto a leveler that has level up tokens on it and he copies it, does the copy get level up tokens? The answer is
all right. This one I'm positive of, so I would not get yelled at in the forums. No, you do not get fully leveled up, guys, because it checks to see how many level counters are on the creature, and you do not copy the number of counters.
Exactly. So there you go. I agree with you 100%, Conley.
Well, it doesn't matter if you agree, because I'm right.
Those are both wrong, but this one we know I know we're actually right. Tom Behewind wrote in that he was pretty upset about this potential announcement of a new Eternal format starting from Mercadium Mass Block and to the future.
It's not really an Eternal format so much. It's basically a new extended.
Kind of resetting the extended format to hopefully make it more attractive and less expensive for new players. And he said a lot of people that were either playing Vintage or Extended now, this might really alienate them. If they spent all this money to get the revised duels and all the other staple cards for the different formats, this is kind of kicking them right in the crotch.
I don't know.
This is his thoughts on it. So I want to hear what you guys think.
So first of all, this is only a rumor, so nobody freak out. Second of all, people are saying that this will basically invalidate Extended and Legacy at the same time because it's kind of a mix between the two. But, I mean, the format has to take off. People have to enjoy it in order for it to work. B, I don't think Legacy will just disappear because people do like playing with dual lands. Like, this does not solve the reserve list issues. Like, just because you can't play with dual lands in this format doesn't mean people don't want to play with dual lands and force of will and all that other stuff. This seems like an okay thing to do for Extended, to like replace Extended, but trying to replace actual Eternal formats with this seems kind of janky. You're basically saying, hey, let's forget about the first, 8 years of Magic. Turn your head to that. Don't remember that because we can't reprint those cards, so just forget about it. That game didn't exist, blah, blah, blah. Like, that seems like a really bad way to go about it if Wizards decides to do that. Hopefully this doesn't actually replace anything. Like, this seems like as Magic grows, you're going to add new formats eventually, like, right? Like, look, think about Magic 30 years from now. Like, you're not just going to have four formats, Extended, Standard, Legacy, and Vintage, because you have a point in there where Extended covers the last 5 years worth of cards, and, Legacy and Vintage cover them all, obviously. But there's a big chunk of 25 years where there's Legacy covers the cards, but there's no other format besides Extended. So, like, as the game grows and more sets are released, eventually they're going to have to add a new format in there anyway, and, you know, continue to do so, you know, every, like, 5 to 10 year chunks. So if this is just, like, a new format unto itself, then that's pretty cool. If they're actually trying to replace Eternal formats with this, I'm not a big fan either.
And, Marcel, yeah. Marcel, I know you're, like you said, mostly MGO player, but do you have any thoughts about this, this potential change to the Paper Magic new Extended?
I think they're trying to replace Legacy, this is a marketing blunder. This is not a good way of dealing with the reserve list, and I think this is their way of trying to be politically correct about it, and I think it's going to bite them in the ass. I see the merit in building the, you know, having a cutoff point there and having a whole new one, and I can see that actually being healthy and working, but yeah, trying to turn your back on Vintage just because you can't reprint the cards is bad. They got to reprint the cards. There's no way that Vintage can be a viable format if there's not enough supply. And I think they understand that, and they're in the bind because they put their foot in their mouth saying they're not going to reprint cards, and now they're stuck. And this is their way of having a fix right now, but I think they're going to find out this may not be the best option, and they might have to re-explore, you know, reprinting the list.
Bottom line is, reprint old cards.
Yeah. Need them.
And this is the thing where we don't know how the decision was reached, if Hasbro was involved in this or not, but it really seems like reprinting old cards...
Foresight claimed Hasbro had nothing to do with this decision.
Oh, and that's what he said on his Twitter feed. But it's one of those things where it'd be uncomfortable to say, hey, this is totally Hasbro's fault. Hasbro's like, hey, we own you.
But at the same time, he wouldn't have to acknowledge that they had nothing to do with it. If they actually had something to do with it, chances are we just would not have heard Hasbro's name at all. But the fact that he came out and said that Hasbro had nothing to do with it makes me think that they actually didn't. And he said he was actually for the reprinting of cards, and some other people were too. But he said there are bigger forces at work here, basically. He said, like, my opinions on the matter aren't unfortunately, accepted amongst the group, and therefore, you know, the vote went against us, is basically what happened.
I mean, what do you think, who do you think these bigger forces are? I mean, are these, like, the huge retailers that would be mad if, but they would be happy to sell these new packs? I mean,
yes,
President Obama call? Like, who's this mysterious big force?
The Magic Racket.
It's like the
Bears Diamonds, they got the cartel, and I guess there may be a certain amount of people that have, like, a set of cars, and they got a constricted market, and once they release, you know, new cars, it's going to just throw off their entire investment. And though there's probably a couple few people that are very powerful in the Magic world that may have certain influence, if it was up to Hasbro, I mean, if they would reprint that set, the list, I mean, that's like printing gold right there. People buy those cars and stock them up. I mean, they would make so much more money. They'd have, like, 5 times earnings. So I don't think that if they knew actually what would happen, that they would reprint the cars, they might want to, you know, force it through, honestly.
Yeah, like, I don't know, Hasbro would, definitely be for printing cards. I mean, there's no reason for them not to. And, like, they say that their name gets slandered, basically, if they do print these cards. But, like, that seems like a weak excuse to me. It seems like, you know, you were talking about those people at, like, Gen Con and stuff like that, where you walk around and dealers have, you know, you basically have to pick what mint type Lotus you want. Do you want a 9.4 or 9.8 or 8.2 or whatever?
Or if you have $89,000, you can get a 10.0.
Yeah, which is BS, by the way. But, you know, you have these hundreds of Lotuses just stockpiled in one location, and then you turn to the next dealer and they have 100 too. Like, it seems like those people are the ones kind of making this into a bigger deal than it has to, because I can't imagine, like, it seems like the player base as a whole, a vast majority of them are for these reprints, and sure, there are some naysayers, but it doesn't seem like that's the majority at all, so it has to be somebody like dealers that have been collecting these older cards or whatnot.
I've been wanting to play with boxes and Black Lotuses my whole life, and I mean, just the mere fact of thinking I could play with those cards, you know, would bring me back into playing Magic if I ever quit, so I mean, it's just... Yeah, I mean, really.
Like, the conspiracy theorists would say that, like, this is, you know, them saying they're not going to reprint cards is actually a lie, just to buy those said dealers time to sell off their cards while they're still high, and then, you know, wait a few months and then be like, oh, we are going to actually reprint cards, and now that these people don't have stockpiles of Lotuses anymore, they feel a lot better about it.
True, but I mean, even the original cards, I don't see going down in value, because, I mean, again, not people want either. The original. I mean, you got so many, yes, they're not, those are limited cards. There's only a certain set. Those, you're going to put them all in plastic and have them graded, and, you know, people want those. I mean, the value may dip, but it'll come right back. I mean, they just got a Band-Aid they got to remove, and they're just doing the slow pull right now. They just need to take it right off.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's bad. It seems bad to me.
And I think, Marcel, I think you have a really good point. Is in my mind, I think of comic books where they, of course, they've re-released the, you know, the origin stories of all the, you know, all the comic heroes that you can think of. Does that affect the price of the actual original Action Comics one? No. Believe people can actually read the comic now.
This happens in Magic. You could literally just look at a Beta Underground C and an Unlimited Underground C, and there are $600 worth of difference there. The cards were printed, you know, a few years apart from each, or not even like a year apart from each other, I guess. And one, you know, Unlimited and Revised Underground Seas are printed 100 times more than Beta, and the Beta one's still, you know, worth a ton despite them reprinting it. And even in White Border, like, I wouldn't have a problem if they reprinted Power and Dual Lands as White Border cards. If that's the problem, like, feel free to print them however you want. They could, you know, as long as they're tournament legal, I don't care.
Well, so send us more emails. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this one. Because we had to revive the horse so we can beat it to death again. Next, we have Brian N. He sent in his Rise of Eldrazi pre-release combo, which was Pathraiser of Ulamog plus Hedron Matrix, which I thought was pretty cool, giving his guy +11/+11.
I mean, Pathraiser's pretty good by himself, too.
So I thought that was a pretty good, hey, I'm going to win even more combo.
Basically.
He also agrees with the prior discussion of Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus as being a good movie. And he actually sent in a link about a website that went through the actual physics. Could a shark jump up and eat a plane? It's very, very well done. It's in the show notes, and I'll link it. So you guys can check it out. And listeners, it's going to be linked to the show notes. It's worth your time. Very well done infographic. Looks like it could come out of Popular Science.
Okay.
Next, we have Joe H. Joe was the person that was by far the most offended by my discussion of the Deathless Angel art and my perception of her potential weight issues. So I want to say, everybody, I didn't mean to offend anybody. I was just kind of talking to be entertaining. I don't actually like run around punching fat people on principle.
She loves Rosie O'Donnell. Come on.
This is exact. And this is why I didn't say this last week. When I read this week, we all know that I have a love for Rosie O'Donnell. Hey, proof is in the pudding right there. Let's see, Alex M., he sent in an actual deck list for a white, blue, red wall deck he calls the American Border Patrol, which I thought was pretty good. Philip H., he writes in, said he played in the pre-release and he had a white, green, red defender deck with 7 2-drop walls and 3 overgrown ramparts. So he said he imagined like turn
four. I think it's overgrown battlements.
Overgrown battlements. Yeah, I was reading the actual email here. But really, he was having insane mana ramping to put out huge things like Transcendent Masters and other Eldrazi. He also wanted to recommend some B-horror movies of Slumber Party Massacre 1 and 2. And apparently a guy kills people with an electric guitar drill. So there you go. Jesse from Belgium, he sends in his first email. And first he wanted to say what might be the awesomest movie he's ever seen. And it's a movie called You're the Hunter of the Future. He sent me a link to a review of this on the Spoonie Experiment. This may be one of the best, worst, kind of mid-80s, kind of Conan high fantasy movies I have ever witnessed. Basically, you take Conan, you mix it with, like, hair, butt, you know, butt rock hair metal, and you get this movie, Yore. I like this so much, actually, on eBay on this weekend, I found the original VHS tape. It's never been released on DVD. So I now have Yore, the Hunter of the Future, on VHS. I just got it yesterday.
Is it like an 80s version of Ungbok?
Kind of, yes, because it's all, and every time that Yor does something, he has his theme music. It just says, Yor's world, he's the man. Like, it just keeps, that's his theme music. It's incredible movie. I wish it was on DVD so people could get it much easier. But if you have the money, I spent $20 to get it on VHS, and it was worth every penny. So, Jesse, I wanted to say thank you very much for that recommendation. Matt from Madison says, thanks for doing MTGcast. He enjoys it. Let's see. He also, basically, he was asking about any other draft archetypes, and we talked about that before. So, Matt, we answered your question before on the show for you. Jason S., he writes in, we actually brought this up last time. We had an email about a person asking about the depiction of race in Magic card art. And I completely forgot about the entire set of Mirage, which is, yeah. I guess, was Mirage. It was supposed to be like an African theme.
Yeah. Just like Kamigawa, it's kind of like Japanese theme.
Exactly. So we're just going to talk about the depiction of race in Magic card art. And we had a lot of really good emails back about this. You guys weren't on the show last time. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, diversity is a good thing. I mean, the world is a diverse place. And the more that gets represented in Magic, I mean, you might be able to reach out to more people. And it won't be such a homogeneous market.
Especially when the Magic game itself is so international. It's in, I don't know, how many different languages and how many different countries.
Yes, worldwide.
So, yeah, I think it's like 40 languages or something crazy now.
Yeah, so I mean, if that was an interesting question. That's why I like doing the show, is you get interesting discussion topics that are Magic-related but just aren't, hey, what are the best cards to be playing in Draft Limited for Rise of the Eldrazi? Let's see, next we had Jared D. He sends in a recommendation for B-movies for anything made by Asylum. These are the people that made Mega Shark vs. Giant Octopus. And they also tend to like to make a lot of movies that are, their names are closely related to big hit blockbuster movies, but not quite. So one example is they have a movie called Transmorphers.
Oh, I heard about these people. Yeah, I heard they're really good, actually.
Yeah, they're really, you know, if you're into...
Really good, bad.
Really good, bad, exactly. If you're into B-level movies that are entertaining because the quality is poor, but they just have that special magic to make them entertaining, Asylum is your team.
It did Snakes on the Plane, right? Is that right?
Ooh, that I don't know. I actually have the link here. I can tell you in about 2 seconds. This is the magic of the internet, guys. I can actually look up information while we talk. So I'm looking for... They did Snakes on a Train.
Oh, Snakes on a Train.
Not Snakes on a Plane, it's Snakes on a Train. They also have Transmorpher. They have Universal Soldiers, which... Wasn't that already a movie? Or was Universal Soldier, excuse me. So they just put an S on the end. They have 30,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Just to give you an idea how they do this, it's really, really dumb. The Day the Earth Stopped. Instead of The Day the Earth Stood Still. They have one that I admit sounds interesting from 2008. This is called Countdown Jerusalem, which I admit sounded interesting. And they also have Paranormal Entity, which was one of their latest movies. So thank you for that recommendation. It was pretty good. Let's see. David S., he agreed with Jack's recommendation of Let the Right One In. He also recommends a foreign language film called The Orphanage. And also, in relation to our discussion for Conley and Buckets, is Pink Flamingos. Which is directly related to that, actually.
The worst.
Have you ever seen Pink Flamingos, Conley?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. It is a disgusting movie.
Yes.
So yeah, Josh M., he wants to give kudos to, again, Let the Right One In. He also watched Thanksgiving and recommends another movie on streaming, Netflix streaming, called Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. So apparently Jesus Christ is resurrected and now hunts vampires, is the premise of this movie. Let's see, Joseph M., he's a fantasy artist. He sent in this really good discussion, again, about kind of race and magic art. And he just pointed out that most artists, they tend to, when they do their art, they tend to depict people that look like themselves. You know, A, just because, you know, identifying their culture, but also that they tend to use themselves as models. So if you're looking at a person, if you're looking at yourself, you're going to tend to draw people who are the same race as you, which I thought was a good point.
I would be very shameless right now and make a bad joke, but I'm not going to.
Okay, you should refrain yourself.
I am.
Okay, thank you.
If I was doing stand-up right now, I would be letting it rip, though.
Okay, good. You can share with us after the show.
No, I can't. The reason I can't is because of Marcel. I might get punched.
If he could punch you from Oakland all the way to Colorado, I would be impressed, and I'd be willing to have that happen.
No, it's all right. I'm just gonna hold back here. Continue.
Let's see. Next, we have Ryan from Canada. He also wanted to point out the Mirage and the race in there was the Jumura. And he also thought the way that the vampires were represented in Zendikar were pretty interesting. He calls it kind of Aztec meets 17th century Britain, which I thought was actually a pretty good description of it. He also wanted to point out that Bonanza, which is my favorite restaurant of all time, and it still is my favorite restaurant, the one in his hometown, which is in Canada, now has its own website. So way to go, Bonanza.
What? This is the strangest emails we get sometimes.
You have to remember, this is not all of them. I call some out. So you got to remember, these are the ones that made the cut. So, Marcel, I'm not sure if you're listening to the show when this came up, but we had this discussion. We had a lot of emails about what's the furthest you've ever driven or traveled to eat at a specific restaurant?
Ooh, to L.A. Well, with my dad, he took me to go get a pastrami burrito. As a kosher burrito. Yeah, I know. It's surprisingly good. Believe me, I did not believe he said kosher burritos. We're going to get kosher burritos. And we drove to L.A., which is about 300 miles, so about a five-hour trip, and got the... It's delicious, actually.
Is this like a hard shell, soft shell?
Oh, no, it's a regular soft shell burrito, the flour tortillas, and they just put a bunch of pastrami cheese, wrap it up, and they give you some sauce. I don't know what it is exactly, but it just... It works. It's one of those things that you just look at it like, no.
I'm going to have to try this. Like, what's it called?
It's called a kosher burrito. It was made with pastrami meat instead.
But I mean, is that the name of the place that sells it? Or?
Oh, I don't know the actual name of the place.
I'll have to look it up because I'm coming to L.A. for the M11 release. I'm doing gunslinging out there, so I'm going to have to try this. I had Reuben egg rolls for the first time like 3 weeks ago. That was interesting.
Reuben egg rolls, how'd that work?
It's just an egg roll, but it's got, you know, like corned beef and sauerkraut and inside of it. It was interesting. you dip it in Thousand Island dressing and it says sweet and sour sauce.
Ooh.
It was good. I was surprised.
Yeah, I'd have to hold
it
out.
Wasn't like it didn't have other egg roll. I mean, it was basically just a Reuben, but it was like in an egg roll shell, excuse me. So it was like crispy like that and deep fried. But I mean, it tasted just like a Reuben, just with like crispiness. I don't know, it was pretty good.
That's gonna be hungry.
I can't talk. I don't know if you guys, anybody saw on my Facebook that my mother-in-law made me a litter box cake for my birthday last week.
Yeah, you told us about it.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I heard about that. Oh.
it's tough to eat. It's almost tough to eat because it looks the melted Tootsie Rolls look so much like cat turds, like you can't actually eat them. They're too realistic.
My friend's girlfriend, for his birthday one time, gave him a midsection of a female right there in the crotch, and it was all it had like chocolate sprinkles right there for the hair. It was wonderful.
Wow, it was like anatomically. Yeah. I imagine, was there a hot tamale in there somewhere?
Yes, everything. It was everything. And she, you know how he went there to blow out the candles, push his face right in the middle. It was photogenic.
Wow. That's a new term to fire crotch, man, where you put the candles. But last but not least, email. We have a couple more. I'm going to put these on to next week. Is a Benny Smith from not Benny Hill, Benny Smith from Star City Games and the Elder Dragon. I can't even talk. Someone, Elder Dragon Highlander podcast. He wanted to recommend that I take a listen to the Dan Band cover of Milkshake. I did not know who the Dan Band was until I went and listened to it. And this is the band that's from all the different Happy Gilmore production movies, like The Wedding Singer.
Yeah,
I didn't know that was an actual band.
Oh, he's in a. It's in a. What is? I'm trying to remember the movie. Is isn't the same guy that he's in. The Hangover, the guy that just sings at the end at the wedding?
Yeah, I mean, he's been, I think, probably three or four movies with kind of his dirty remakes of well-known songs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he does a very good cover of Milkshake. And he also gave me a B-movie recommendation of Feast. It was made in 2005, and it was executively produced by Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and Wes Craven, which is an interesting potpourri of producers. Oh, guys, that was all my emails. We'll share some more next week. Do you have any that you want to go through before I go through our winners of some Rise of the Eldrazi packs?
It's all on you, Tom.
Oh, sorry, because I feel like I talk so much during this part of the show, I get self-conscious.
Well, I talk too much every other time, so you're allowed to.
And when I'm talking about this Jonas Brothers poster I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, I'm actually in the poster. I think I sent you a copy of this before.
You have.
Yeah.
And it was just you're easily the ugly one.
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing, because I'm the only one without a shirt on in the poster. I'll send this one to you, Marcel. It's for Shutterfly. You can actually, for gifts and things, they have posters like Transformers, Jonas, all these things where if you send a picture of the person, they'll cut them out and insert them into the poster.
Oh, wow.
I have this really disturbing photo of me from my trip to Puerto Rico that we put into the Jonas Brothers poster. I'll send it to you. We'll just say it's highly suggestive.
Puerto Rico 1 month.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. Yeah. So, guys, you waited a guys and girls, don't send me emails.
Guys and fat girls, Tom, come on.
There you go. All I'm imagining is when I lived in Australia, people are much more comfortable with their bodies in general, so they would tend to wear outfits I thought would be inappropriate. And we had nicknamed one called the muffin top, where if you have tight jeans and a tight shirt, but you have some extra stuff that comes out the middle, it looks like a muffin top.
Yep, it's classic.
It is classic. So we finally, after about a month and a half, we're going to announce the winners of our booster pack giveaway. And I waited so long, I actually updated the packs to being Rise of the Eldrazi. So you get the newest pack, so be happy. We have 12 winners. Each winner gets 3 booster packs of Rise of the Eldrazi. All you need to do to claim your winnings is send me your mailing address. And hopefully it's in countries that accept, you know, postal mail. Let's see. So winners, we'll go through these pretty quickly, but I'll name their name and then who they picked. First, we have Nanarchy, who picked Sean Connery to play Urza, which I thought was a pretty good one. Philip Heckman, he picked Triple H as Sarkhan Bol, and they actually do look very similar. Poker Bob 1, he made this one just for me, and he had Neil Patrick Harris playing Jace Bellerin. We have Relock has Kevin Bacon or Christopher Walken playing Soren Markov, and then Chuck Norris as a Johnny Vengeant.
Wow.
I thought that was a really good one. Quicklane had a good choice of Keanu Reeves as Jace Bellerin, because it kind of is the sci-fi emo background, kind of that emo, mopey thing that he can do. I think Keanu would be a good fit. Tosis, he picks Michael Dorn, who played Worf on Star Trek Next Generation, for a Johnny Goldmane, and Samuel Jackson voicing a CGI Nicol Bolas, and then Nathan Fillion as Urza, which I thought was a very good pick, too. I'm a huge Nathan Fillion fan. And then we have caudates. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be after the caudate nucleus. I'm not sure. Who picks Carrot Top as Chandra Nalar. And then Marlon Wayans as Soren Markov. And then he said there should be a copious number of Blackula references. Which I thought was pretty interesting. And this was probably one of the best actual I could see this person being cast for this character. Was Johnny. That was the name. With Helena Bonham Carter as Liliana Vess. I thought that was an excellent choice. We have Green Mana Guy who picks Ron Perlman as a Johnny Goldmane. And he actually sent me a link to IMDb where Ron Perlman apparently played the Beast in the TV series version of Beauty and the Beast. So he actually looks like a Johnny Goldmane right there in the pictures of this TV show. We have Biomechanica, who had Marlon Wayans playing Sarkhan Vol, and even had this long description, and very well done, I'll have a link in the show notes, to how his different Planeswalker abilities linked to his filmography, which was very well done. We have Culeryn, C-U-L-E-R-Y-N, who had Dominic West playing Tezzeret. And again, they sent a link to the IMDb page. I'd never heard of this actor.
Neither have I.
And so I had to pull it up. He's been in a few different TV shows, and he does look very much like Tezzeret on the Carter. So I had to say, hey, good job. You found an actor I've never heard of that does look like the Planeswalker. Then last but not least, we have Etsap, E-T-S-A-P, with Jeremy Irons as Nicol Bolas, Val Kilmer as Tezzeret, then Charlize Theron as Elspeth. So these will all be in the show notes. Those are the 12 winners. Send me your mailing address, and I'll get your packs to you in the mail within the next couple of weeks. And also, Eric, doing a little bit of self-promotion at the end of our show, says, hey, there's a new episode of Mr. Suitcase coming out again. So there you go. Guys, my voice is getting hoarse. Do you have anything to add in?
Oh, nay.
I'm tired.
Sounds like a rat.
And I saw one good B-movie this weekend. I rewatched Scanners from 1981 with Michael Ironsides. Have you guys seen this movie?
I have not.
I can't remember. I believe seen it, but I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Conley.
I'm not into horrible movies like you.
This is a B-movie from like the quality production-wise, but it's actually a very good kind of cult classic sci-fi movie. This is one of the first movies where, you know, some very representative of the human population is born with psychic powers, telepathic powers. And basically they can perceive the thoughts and they can control the minds of others, but it usually drives them nuts hearing everybody else's thoughts.
So it's like the original Jumper? The other one that's like Jumper. What's the name of it? Push.
It very, very similar where this, where they can kind of, and if they focus on them, and Michael Ironsides is the bad scanner in this movie. And if he concentrates enough, like, it makes this really high-pitched, like, wheezing sound, and then the people start to shake, and their heads actually physically explode. And it's very well done.
Where's your line for B-movies? Like, do you consider, like, something like Army of Darkness a B-movie?
Yes. There's no set definition of a B-movie. Like, I would argue that Tremors with Kevin Bacon from 1990 is a B-movie.
Tremors is, like, everybody knows about Tremors, though. It's not like a hidden B-movie.
No,
it's like,
as I say, things they don't consider to be unknown to be a B-movie. I would even argue with people it made a ton of money, but like Independence Day, at its heart, that's about aliens coming down.
How could that be a B movie?
Because of the theme of the movie. You have Bill Pullman who can't act as well as a paper bag, playing the president of the United States, which is just offensive. And then we have these crappy aliens coming down and just destroying everything, and they beat at them with a Mac computer virus.
But Will Smith is pretty sweet in the movie.
He's pretty good.
I have a man crush on Will Smith as well.
Like, what do you have? My kind of man crush or your kind of man crush?
My kind of man crush. Oh. Like, Pursuit of Happiness is an insane movie.
I haven't seen that one, actually. It looked a little
too bad.
Pursuit of Happiness? Yeah. I literally cannot watch the part where they're in the bathroom without crying my eyes out. There you go.
I actually worked on the movie for a day, and I didn't even see it.
You worked on Pursuit of Happiness?
Yeah, I worked for a stagehead union in San Francisco, and they shot in San Francisco, so I did one day on the set. I was doing labor, so.
Oh, very cool.
Well, there's my blockbuster recommendation of the week. It's not a B movie. Everyone go see Pursuit of Happiness. You will thank me later. I love that movie.
All right, guys, we're gonna wrap this up. Jack, who couldn't join us, he had his recommendation for everybody to check out, a movie called Hard Candy. I don't know anything about it.
Oh, that's a retarded movie. Basically, like, this girl is, like, she gets picked up by an internet guy, like, via the internet, and you think that she's being exploited by this guy for sex, and then turns out she's actually the exploiter.
Ooh. Yeah, it says a mature 14-year-old girl basically picks up a 32-year-old dude.
Yeah, but, like, you're led to believe that he's about to, like, basically, you know, solicit her for sex despite her being young and stuff, and it turns out to be the opposite.
Is she supposed to look like Little Red Riding Hood, or am I just getting that from the box?
She's creepy. I don't even know what she looks like. I don't know. She looks like she's 14, and she's actually like a 27-year-old woman or something like that. It's kind of crazy.
All right, there you go. Jack's a weird guy, and there's his movie pick. Guys, it was a momentous show, right? Like an hour and 40 minutes. That was a good one.
I know. I woke up at 7 o'clock, just so in case anyone wants to know. I went to bed.
I went to bed
at 7 a.m., woke up 7 p.m. It was a wonderful sleep, and jumped on the show, and I've yet to eat today. So that's how dedicated I am to this show.
Oh, we appreciate it. And Marcel, I assume he has better sleep habits than you do, but I also appreciate Marcel being with us today.
Well, I got thrown off by 24 hours of magic. I was up for like 28 hours straight or something.
That was a personal choice.
I had to work. It wasn't a personal choice. It was a professional choice.
Glutton for punishment.
Yeah.
All right, Marcel, any last thoughts before we close this one off and I can just wait for my barrage of hate mails for this upcoming week about Minecraft?
And I'll try out the Jack Magic paper trick, and I'll see if my cigarettes come out all right.
let me know. I'll try to dig up the Wikipedia link that I have.
Please do.
All right, guys. Everybody, thank you for watching. If you want to send us an email, pitimp@mtgcast.com, conley@mtgcast.com, or marcel@mtgcast.com. We love you. Man crushes all around. We'll talk to you guys later.
Peace.
Bye.